Welcome to Experts Secrets to Diabetes Reversal Summit. I am so glad that you have chosen to join me. My name is Lucia Tiffany, and my guest today is Cindy Leffler. Thank you for coming to be with us today, Cindy. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, you know, Cindy Leffler is a registered dietitian with years of experience working in disease reversal. She's worked in centers from New Start at Weimar in California to faith-based intensive lifestyle programs in Michigan, where she's been responsible for planning, teaching, and preparing meals to reverse chronic lifestyle diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. So today we are going to be talking about food and how food can impact us as we are thinking about reversal of diabetes, reversal of prediabetes, or even the prevention of diabetes, because the same foods are going to help us in all three of those areas. So I want to start by asking you, Cindy, how did you get started working in this area of lifestyle change?
Well, you know, it's really, it really started before I was born. My mother was what some people would call a health nut. She took a nutrition class probably years before I was born, and as a result was very, very interested in food and how to eat healthfully. So I was raised very conscious. She was not what I would call controlling in the area of food, but she was very clear that what we eat affects our health, whether we're going to get sick, if you're going to get a cold, you don't want to be eating a lot of sugar, you know, that sort of thing was the way I was raised. And I had an uncle who was a registered dietitian. That was her brother. And he had a couple of boys that were diabetic. And so I was raised in this environment where it was very clear that what you eat can affect your body in many ways and affect disease management. So then years later, when I went to work at Weimar Institute, I had a front row seat in being able to watch people come in with many different lifestyle diseases. Many of them had diabetes along with other health issues, and see them come in, many of them unable to walk, maybe in a wheelchair, and then leave about 18 days later with having lost weight and exercising and just coming to life in those 18 days. So it was really exciting and kind of hooked me into this a much more passionate view of wanting people to know that changes in lifestyle can hugely impact their health.
Oh, that is amazing. 18 days, that seems like such a short period of time. You were really seeing such dramatic changes?
Oh, absolutely. And the immersion programs that I've been helping with here in Michigan are actually 10 days.
Wow.
So when you work with health professionals and you can, and some of these were live-in programs, you can make dramatic changes, not just in what people are eating, but in other aspects of lifestyle management, so that there's a lot of, like if you're doing it on your own, you might not do all of it at once, but with a lifestyle program like that, you can affect how people are sleeping, what their schedule is, the regularity, water intake, you know, they have an exercise physiologist, all of these kind of things. And all of them together make huge differences in people's lives. And it's just incredible. Within about, you know, when people have depression and they come for a depression program 10 days, within 3 or 4 days, you start to see the darkness lift off people's faces and they just become much more vibrant. The same with diabetes. Within just a few days of making lifestyle changes, you'll see blood sugar starting to drop, and it's really exciting.
That is super exciting, but it's also a word of caution. If you are diabetic, if you are currently taking medications to help control your blood sugar, it's super important that you work with your healthcare provider as you implement the things you're learning in this summit. Because as various of our presenters have brought out, and you may hear still in the future, other presenters in the series, there are some really dramatic changes that can happen with very simple changes in what you're doing. And it can be dangerous for someone on diabetes medication to make those changes without an adjustment in their medication. You could go into a life-threatening low blood sugar episode. So as we are talking and so excited about how quickly you can have effects and how strong those effects can be, please keep in mind your own safety and your own situation. It is so important that you work with your health provider as you implement the things that we're talking about today. Because Cindy, we want to talk about some things that actually change the way people's body is metabolizing their blood, as metabolizing the sugars they eat within hours and days. Mm-hmm. And so this change can be very quickly. And you mentioned one other thing that I also wanted to emphasize to people, which is that you get to choose how quickly you make the changes. The quicker the changes, the quicker you will notice differences in how you feel and your energy and your weight. But for some people, doing the changes at a little bit slower pace can be more sustainable, especially if you don't have maybe the level of support that you might have in an intensive program. So the pace at which you make the changes is completely up to you. Now, I wanted to ask you, Cindy, you mentioned a few things like people's faces brightening up, seeing changes in blood sugar. What kinds of other changes have you observed as people adopted a different way of eating?
Well, I mean, one of the most dramatic things that we tended to see was people would lose weight. Mm. And so they tended to drop a few pounds, start to feel a little lighter on their feet. Sometimes people would have neuropathy that would become a little bit less over the time that they would be there. Pain reversal was pretty common, where people would have various joint pains that would be less over the time, or even go away altogether, depending upon, it would change people's actual attitude, even if they weren't depressed. There was this sort of positive cycle that would happen where people would just feel so much better, and it actually would all sort of coalesce and work together so that people would end up with a much better attitude after a time of being there.
Well, you know, I have had people say, I never realized how bad I felt till I started feeling good.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it does really make a difference to the whole person. It's not just something that affects your blood sugar numbers. Yeah. It affects every part of your being. So I'd like to know a little bit more about what kinds of dietary changes were being implemented to see these changes.
So one of the big things that I think a lot of people noticed was a much higher fiber content in their diet than what they had had before. So tended to be that we serve a lot of whole foods, whole plant foods, with emphasis on sort of natural ingredients with minimal preparation, so that it's not not a lot of, I wouldn't say processing, because this is kind of a discussion that that you can say, if you cut up a piece of broccoli and steam it, now you have processed broccoli. Well, I'm not opposed to that kind of broccoli, but if you take broccoli and you extrude it and, you know, mess with it and come up with little crispy sticks that now have broccoli in them, I'm opposed to that kind of processing. So I don't want to really use the word process so much, but if you've refined food and taken away fiber and added a bunch of fat and salt and things, now the food is not as healthful. And so the emphasis in all of these immersion programs is a more whole food, plant-based diet that is not highly refined in the process that it has. So where the refining actually takes away both the fiber and micronutrients and macronutrients even, and phytochemicals and antioxidants, all of these things are lost in the processing of food or the refining of food. And so when you take a food and you cook it and whatever it needs to be so that it's digestible, and that's important, then your body is much more likely to be able to use what it needs, because the food is actually packaged the way it comes out of the garden in the ideal proportions of proteins and carbohydrates and fats and nutrients so that the body can absorb the maximum nutrients from those foods. When we start messing with them by taking away fiber or adding, you know, fats and salts and things, we tend to make them less beneficial to the body. So to me, it's very important, as I've observed, that people eat whole plant foods and eat them whole. And by that, I'm not saying, you know, gulp down a whole apple, but I'm just saying eat everything that it came with, the skin and the flesh.
So it sounds to me like we're talking about two similar, but not exactly the same processes, where you're talking about refining of foods or the processing of foods, where refining means something actually got taken out of it. Mm-hmm. And often that means something gets added as well, but the taken out. So like white flour that's had the bran and the germ removed would be an example of a refined food. Right. Where processing is pretty much anything you do to a food after it comes out of the garden or off the tree. And some of that's okay. And some of that's not quite so okay.
Right.
And I'd like to kind of dig into that just a little bit, because like you said, chopping and steaming broccoli is a form of processing the broccoli, but not one that is particularly detrimental.
Right.
There are other forms of processing, though. For example, I think maybe we see that a lot with grains, where we can take a whole grain, like the kernel of the grain, a wheat kernel or a barley kernel, and then like a minimal processing might be where we just split that grain with a knife. And that's like a steel cut oats, for example, that's just split. So that's a kind of processing. When you put them through rollers and you roll it into flakes, that's another kind of processing that does not involve taking anything away. Quick oats, once again, you're not taking anything away, but they're pre-cooked. So it's like there are a lot of stages in this processing of grains, with the last stage maybe being the production of flour. How does this processing particularly affect people who are challenged with blood sugar control?
Well, it's really fascinating. And the truth is, there's a lot we don't know yet. So I want to say that first. But one of the things that we do know is that as the grains are processed to a more finer product, the body absorbs the food made with that more quickly. So in other words, if you take a piece of white bread and you eat that, for your body, it's almost like eating straight up sugar. You know, it's absorbed into the system really quickly. It's going to affect your blood sugars really, really fast. And so the more processed and refined that grains go through, but even sort of the grinding of whole wheat, it's much more quickly absorbed in the body than if you then eat the whole grain. So let's take a piece of a cup of whole wheat and you cook it in a slow cooker overnight, let's say, and you eat that in the morning. You have to chew it. It gets mixed in with your saliva. Mm-hmm. You're chewing and chewing because it is chewy, and you chew it and you chew it. This is good. This is actually a benefit to your body. Digestion starts in the mouth. Well, if you think about it, if you eat a piece of bread, very often you don't have to chew it that much. You know, if you have a mouthful of cooked wheat berries and a mouthful of toast, which one are you going to get down more quickly?
Yes.
Toast. So the more refined, the more ground up things are, the quicker it's going to enter your bloodstream. So this is especially important for diabetics. The more you can use the whole grains properly cooked, and they do need to be properly cooked. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole discussion. We probably don't want to get distracted with this right now, the whole lectin thing. Well, the truth of the matter, if a grain is properly cooked, given, you know, plenty of water and on a slow cooker and whatever, it's well digested. But the benefit is that you have to chew it. Mm. And you chew it, you're mixing it with saliva, there's hormones, there's all sorts of gastric juices that end up getting mixed with this. And so it enters your bloodstream at a much more slow rate than what if you're using a more processed
or refined. Exactly. So it sounds to me like eating the wheat berries or the barley groats or the oat groats will lead to much less spiking of the blood sugar than even, for example, a meal of old-fashioned rolled oats, the way many people eat oats for cereal. So that just making that simple switch from a rolled oat to a whole oat groat can all by itself create less of a spike in your after breakfast blood sugars. Am I understanding that correctly?
Exactly. Yes.
And well, awesome. That's a great secret. We're talking about expert secrets in this summit. And I think that's a secret that I haven't heard any other expert talk about so far in the interviews that we've recorded. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I need to add here, even though I'm a dietitian, the other thing that needs to happen after that breakfast is a gentle walk. So that go for just a gentle, doesn't have to be, we're not talking about a, marathon or anything, just a gentle 10 minute little walk after your meal is going to be a huge thing to helping your body know where to put that starch, where to put those calories after you eat. But that's, of course, it's not about nutrition so much, but it is, because it does affect digestion. At Weimar, they used to call them digestive. So you go out after a meal for a digestive and you take a little walk. And if you can't go outside because of weather, you can walk around your living room, walk up and down your stairs in your house, whatever you have available, but take some sort of gentle walking after a meal, and it will be like you got a hit of insulin, actually.
You know, that's pretty amazing, because you're telling us that exercise right after a meal can be as effective as medication in preventing the blood sugar spike that so many people will see after a meal.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and it isn't exercise in the sense that you don't want to be like necessarily, you want to be able to talk while you're walking.
So not too vigorous, you're saying.
Not too vigorous, because of course that is another thing that, can negatively affect digestion if you exercise too vigorously after you eat. But you just a gentle walk, just a calm pace where you just kind of walk, it does, yes, have that same effect on your blood sugar.
That's great. And I understand that the physiology of that has something to do with working your big muscles that are needing some sugar to work. And that helps kind of use up the stores they may have, so they have room for taking in the sugar that's coming from your meal. Is that
right?
Simple language.
It's just telling your blood sugar where to go.
Telling your blood sugar where to go. I love that.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. We actually can give our blood sugar some directions.
Yeah.
It's not just random and it's not just chance.
Right.
So that's a great way to look at after meal exercise. I love that. As you worked with people in these lifestyle programs, do you have any stories that you could share about how you saw a change in diet really affect someone with diabetes? I'd love to hear one of your stories.
Well, it's so fascinating. And the human body is so unique. Everybody is unique in the way that they respond to different changes. But we had a lady that came to one of the immersions here in Michigan. Her blood sugars ran normally between 300 and 400. She didn't want to have any medications. She wanted to control this with diet, but she was just struggling. And so she came to the immersion program, and she had tried a cleanse a few years before, and she had gotten her blood sugars, I think she said, down in the 200s, like 240, 220. Wow. She had never gotten her blood sugars any lower than that with anything that she had tried. So we started in, and it was just a 10-day program. And so we had to work quickly with her. And so we started in giving her the typical diet that we had, and it just wasn't getting her blood sugars down as low as what it needed to for the time that we had to work. If you have a little bit longer, sometimes you can work with things over time. Right. It's a little easier, but we were trying to really address this as quickly as possible. So the physician that we were working with suggested, well, how about she goes on stems, leaves, and flowers for a couple of days and see what happens? And she was just like, what's that? And so it's like, well, any vegetables that are stems, leaves, and flowers. So stems would be things like asparagus or celery, of flowers might be cabbage or broccoli and cauliflower, and leaves would of course be greens like a kale and spinach. And so we put her on this for a couple of days. Now at that program, they were getting fed twice a day. So her morning meal and her second meal. And obviously we're doing a lot of blood sugars with her, trying to keep track of what was happening to her body as she was exercising and drinking water and all of this. And so the first morning after she had had those stems and leaves and flowers for two meals, the first morning she got up. Now your blood sugar tends to be low and then you start moving, your blood sugar goes up. But it started out at something like 115, which wow. was very dramatic for her. And when you've had high blood sugars, it almost feels bad to have such mm-hmm. low blood sugars. You know, your body adapts. It's amazing how body adapts. But anyway, it was just incredible that she stayed without medication. She stayed within the sort of, it wasn't quite as low as what it needed to be. There was some real healing that needed to happen in her body. So they were, you know, she still needed to take some oral meds just to keep her blood sugar in a better range. But mm-hmm. you could see the potential mm-hmm. of what could happen over time as she was able to, you know, her body could heal some of the yeah. scarring that happens as a result of poor choices before from eating good fresh vegetables and fruits and grains and things like that. And so she was just elated. She was so excited. And she said, well, I know that if my blood sugars get out of whack, if I just eat stems and leaves and flowers for a while, I can get them back in. Now, you obviously, if you do that, you have to make sure you're going to get adequate calories. You're going to have to eat an awful lot of that if you're going to do it. You know, you wouldn't be able to do it forever. But it is something that can be done to help get the blood sugars down to see what the body can actually do. So anyway, wow. that was fascinating.
Yes, that is a great story. So understanding the power in stems, leaves, and flowers, when you make them a big part of your diet, then they can actually be extremely powerful, even with sugars that have been difficult to manage. And like Cindy mentioned, it's probably not something where you'd only eat stems, flowers, and leaves forever, because you do need the nutrients that are found in the other food groups of legumes and whole grains and so on. But having that as a major part of your intake, it helps to fill you up, provides tons of fiber, and all of those positive things. I really appreciate you sharing that. Thank you, Cindy.
The other thing, there's a lot of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and phytochemicals and things that are found in those that are very healing to the body. So yes. by eating plants and eating fresh fruits and vegetables and things like that, the body actually heals while you're eating that. So that can actually be beneficial in the healing process as well as in controlling blood sugar. So it's good.
Absolutely. And in case people were wondering, there's actually a fair amount of protein in just eating greens and stems and broccoli. It's like you can get probably if you're eating enough of it, you can get the protein that you need there. So that's one of the beauties of plant foods. It would have to take a lot. But one of the beauties of plant foods is they all have not just carbohydrates, but they also have some level of fats and some level of protein. So yes, it wouldn't be where you'd get all of your protein, but beans and greens can be such a key for diabetics. Just true. Putting those two together as the majority of their calories can be hugely
well,
helpful.
And I want to mention that because a lot of people find that if they'll eat beans for breakfast, it'll help it'll help manage their blood sugars throughout the day. Yes. Even if you don't eat beans at the next meal, but eating beans at breakfast, they've done studies have an effect of keeping blood sugars in the more normal range through the rest of the day. So this is why it's super important to eat at least a quarter of a cup up to a cup and a half of beans at breakfast every day is ideal. And, you know, at Weimar, we would give beans. I mean, there was beans at every meal, everything. but for sure, if you can at least eat them at your first meal of the day, it's totally beneficial to blood sugars.
That's great. Thank you. So you talked about having a lot of fiber in this diet that is concentrated on whole, minimally processed plant foods. Mm-hmm. So as we look at fiber, is all fiber the same? How is it different if it is? Let's talk a little bit about this component of all plant foods that are minimally processed, which is fiber.
Yeah, so there's basically two categories of fiber. There's insoluble fiber and soluble fiber. The insoluble fiber does not dissolve in water, and the soluble fiber dissolves in water. And different plant foods have different soluble and insoluble fiber. Some plant foods have both soluble and insoluble fiber. And I usually say, don't get too hung up about, oh, is this insoluble or is this soluble? Just eat a wide variety of plant foods, a lot of fruits and vegetables, and you will generally get the overall amount of fiber. If you're following the fiber as you're thinking about, okay, what am I eating? If you're eating things that have fiber in them, you'll be okay. If you're eating a lot of processed and refined foods that do not have fiber or have the fiber removed, then you probably have to be a little more concerned about, well, am I getting enough? But if you're eating a whole food plant-based diet, you'll generally speaking get the right balance between soluble and insoluble fiber. And you want to eat a wide variety anyway across a week. You know, I'm not talking about in a day that you have to eat 15, you know, different things for fiber. And that maybe we should mention too, I think the goal of in the US is something like about 25 grams of fiber, 25 to 35 grams of fiber. And many people don't even get 15 grams of fiber in a day. And I would say there is no actual upper limit for fiber. You know, the more, the better in many respects, as long as you get enough calories. The only thing I would say on that is if you currently are having a relatively low fiber diet, you need to be aware that adding fiber can be an adjustment for your gut microbiome. And so the gut microbiome may or may not be used to having the level of fiber. So you may have a little bit of gas or gastric distress by adding fiber. There are two ways to mitigate that. One is to drink plenty of water and get plenty of exercise. And the more fiber you can add into your diet, the more you can look at your food and say, does this thing have fiber? Let me eat something that does have fiber. You know, and if you look at just for an example, you take an apple might have 3 or 4 grams of fiber, a small apple. You make it into applesauce and it reduces down to maybe 2 grams of fiber or just less than 2 grams. And then you get to apple juice and it might have 0.5 gram of fiber. So if you're looking at something, you say, well, let me have a glass of juice. Well, it really doesn't have enough fiber. If you eat an apple, you're going to have fiber and it's going to actually make you a lot more satiety. In fact, this is just a different tip, but
if you're going to go
out to dinner or something, go over to somebody's house and you know, you're going to be tempted to eat a bunch of stuff that you shouldn't. What they found is if you eat a small little 50 calorie apple before you go, you tend to make better choices when you're faced with choices that challenge your stance on things. So it's That's just a little thought that if you're going to go to a potluck or something and you think, oh, I'm just going to eat a bunch of stuff I shouldn't, you might eat a little bit before you go to sort of keep yourself on track when you get there.
Oh, that's interesting. It seems like maybe it takes the edge off your hunger, but because of the fiber, it's still kind of hanging around when you get to your meal. And so you're not so starved.
Exactly. And
that maybe gives you an opportunity to think more clearly about what your choices are going to be and what you're going to consume. That's a great tip. Thank you, Cindy. Now, as we talked about adding fiber, one other thing I was thinking about was that the benefit of fiber for our bodies, we've talked about how it helps to slow down the absorption of sugar from your stomach and your gut into your bloodstream so that you don't get the spikes. But does fiber have some other purposes farther down the gastrointestinal tract?
Well, actually fiber acts like a broom in your intestine. So a lot of people are aware of cholesterol and they're concerned about their cholesterol levels. Well, one of the things that can help your cholesterol level improve is to eat a good amount of fiber, because the fiber attaches to that cholesterol that's in your bloodstream from whatever and helps sweep it out of the body and it's eliminated. So, you know, we need a certain amount of fiber in our body, I mean, cholesterol in our body, but we don't need to eat it. But let's just say we did eat cholesterol in something, or our body's making cholesterol, excessive cholesterol. One of the ways of dealing with that is to eat plenty of fiber, because it will help take that cholesterol out of your body. And it just helps with colon health, because the quicker you can move your gut contents through the transition time, they call it, of moving the food from where you eat it until the waste is eliminated, the longer that time, the more health risks there are for developing colon cancer and other difficulties in the gut and in the bowels. And so the more fiber that you eat, the more these things will move through and keep the gut and the intestines clean, so that you don't end up with some of these other issues. I mean, they know for sure that there's a link between fiber intake and cancer, colon cancer. And so, and there is some question with some other types of cancers as well, the possibility that eating a higher fiber diet will reduce the risk of developing certain kinds of cancer. But certainly there is a connection with keeping the colon healthy by having adequate and frequent bowel movements, which are related to fiber intake.
Oh, that's really important information for us. So it really helps with the function of our bowels if we have adequate levels of fiber, as well as, and I think some of our other presenters might talk about this more, but it also actually feeds the bacteria that promote health in our gut.
Absolutely.
So it has lots of really positive impacts, not only for diabetics, but for everybody. That's so thinking about fiber and making sure that we are including a lot of that in our diet, I think is so important. And remembering that there is no fiber in any animal products. No matter how tough or chewy the meat might be, there is no real fiber there. Is that what I understand?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is interesting, because what they've found is that the more fiber that you eat, even as a diabetic, it helps the blood sugar, and it helps the body in, like when your gut microbiome is healthy because of having adequate fiber and all of that, that your pancreas and your other systems also will function a little bit better as a result of having, because a lot of your hormones and different things are produced there in the gut. Mm. And so these things then affect other systems in the body. And so it's amazing how the body works together. All of the different systems kind of feed off of each other, so to speak. No pun intended. And so when your gut is healthy, that helps the other systems of your body also to be healthier.
Wow. So whole person health isn't just a phrase, it's a reality. God has designed us as whole human beings, and what happens in one aspect of our life affects other aspects.
That's right.
And certain organ systems affect other organ systems. So that's always a very good thing to remember as we talk about health choices that we might be making personally. So as you worked with people who were working to reverse prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, what areas do you think, or have you noticed, that people seem to feel the most challenged with when changing their diet?
To me, the biggest thing is when they're a lot of times you'll have people say, well, I live by myself, I'm fine. My challenge is when I get together with my family or when I go out to eat and I'm going to be with some friends or whatever. What do I do? How do I, you know, when you're by yourself at home, or here's the other thing. Sometimes they're not by themselves at home, but their family is not supportive. So those types of things tend to be what I see as the biggest challenge for a lot of people, is like, well, now they're faced with, you know, it's the holidays and there's going to be cookies every place and candy and this special family recipe that, you know, we always have, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I probably, you know, it's not good for me, but, you know, I'm just going to eat a little bit because, you know, it's just the family thing. And I think that that tends to be one of the big things that I've seen anyway.
And so what recommendations can you give to people to help them in those situations?
Yeah, well, it depends, like I say, on how supportive those people are. Sometimes having a conversation, depending upon your relationship with them, just basically saying, you know, I have to do this or I might not be here next Christmas. I have to be really careful. And if you have a family that, you know, if you can convey to them that it's not, you're not trying to insult grandma's, you know, I don't know, whatever, double fudge chocolate cake or whatever, that it's not that you've left the family. It's that you can't do that anymore without it affecting your health. Yeah. And so sometimes having a conversation, that's where I would start. And then sometimes you can come up with a replacement that is different, but similar enough that people will say, oh, you know, that's not so bad. It doesn't have as much sugar in it, or it might not, you know, might be a little bit different. And so coming up with some kind of replacement, I think the number one thing you have to do is decide what you will do before you get there.
Ah, that's a great key. The making a decision ahead of time about how you're going to handle your choices that you know you're going to be facing.
Right.
You know, I was reading a book by Dr. Will Baumeister on willpower, and he talks about the importance of that pre-decision making. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they actually saw in their studies that if someone had set a boundary in their mind for what they would or wouldn't do, that it became easier to carry through on that. Like their willpower was preserved by making that kind of pre-decision. And I think that that planning ahead can be extremely helpful, even though it's not as, it's easier for some people to do that than others.
Right.
Because some personalities seem to, you know, think ahead a little more than others. So this might be something that's easy for you to do, or it might be more challenging for you to do, but it can be helpful for anyone going into that situation. I think that's really great.
And
so,
it's probably good not to wait until you're facing the family gathering and the family. In other words, if you know, here we are in January, if you're trying to make a change, you start now explaining to your family what you're doing and why you're doing it and what's important, because that way, by the time you face whether
Valentine's,
July or Valentine's, seems like they always come with stuff that's not healthy for people to eat. But anyway, whatever, so that you don't come up to your whole family's bringing you boxes of chocolates and you just say, oh, you know, I love chocolate and now I've got 6 pounds of this stuff to try to deal with, you know, so that they know right ahead. And most loving families are probably going to say, it's okay, you know, we are going to come up with something else for you, maybe some flowers instead or whatever. So I think always coming ahead of the game is always good, and communicating is huge. Mm-hmm. But deciding for yourself that this is what you're going to do is really major.
I think that's a great point. That's another thing for us to think about and plan ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, as we were talking, you have prepared something special for our audience today. You have a little free gift that you're offering them that is going to help them in these areas that we've been discussing today. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about what's going to be available to them when they sign up for this free gift that you're going to provide? What are they going to learn or be able to do?
Well, one of the things that I have really gotten excited about is including vegetables in a lot of unusual things, just to expand the, in other words, basing your diet, your meal around vegetables. You know, I think it's fairly easy to eat fruit. You can grab an apple or something, but sometimes vegetables can be intimidating to people. So one of the things I wanted to share was some of the ideas, some of the different types of things that we're eating in our household to emphasize plants and vegetables, particularly in our diet. So hopefully you'll enjoy the sneaky way of putting vegetables into things that might not ordinarily have them.
Yes, I think that's wonderful. I'm going to be looking forward to that, because it's easy to think about vegetables in terms of a salad or maybe a cooked side dish. but being able to maybe incorporate them in ways that aren't so noticeable, or, you know, people don't just kind of jump off the plate at people as, I am a veggie, might be really helpful, especially if we have family members that aren't great on, you know, really big on vegetables, or might even help us with introducing more vegetables to our children that aren't too thrilled about the green things on their plate. So I'm really looking forward to getting my own copy of that. I think that's going to be very helpful. Thank you so much for being willing to share that important tool with our audience today. As we kind of start to wind down here and get to the end of our time, I wanted to ask you one more question, which is, what is the most underestimated or overlooked truth about the power of lifestyle in diabetes reversal? I would love to know what you see as being one of those underestimated, overlooked truths.
Oh man, there's, oh, only one?
Oh, well, let's start with one, maybe your top one. If you want to throw in a second one, that's fine too.
Let's see. I think something that's overlooked and not really discussed very much sometimes is that it is almost as important when you eat your food as it is what you eat.
Really? So yeah. Timing has that much impact on blood sugars, really?
Yeah, tell it's really, yeah. You know, what's interesting is very often we're taking in calories at the end of the day as we're going to be going to bed. And we might not eat calories in the morning when we're starting our day. So one of the things that's been really interesting to see in some of the research is as people eat earlier in the day, so let's just say breakfast is very important. You know, you hear that, but people are still like not necessarily convinced or not necessarily acting on that. But eating your food earlier in the day allows your body to use the calories through the day and then eating less. There's a physician I'm familiar with that just instructs his patients to switch what they eat for dinner with what they eat for breakfast. So he doesn't even tell them to change what they're eating. They can eat whatever they normally eat for dinner, but eat it at breakfast time and then eat what they normally eat for breakfast. What that tends to do is it switches your calories from the nighttime to the morning. And what he's found in his practice is people's biomarkers are just improving just with that one switch. So I would really encourage people to look at when they're eating their calories, because the more you can eat your calories earlier in the day, then use those calories as you're working through the day, your body will then tend to manage the blood sugars better. You can monitor as you're making changes. By the way, a good thing to do is to check your blood sugars very frequently before you eat and after you eat, so that you're paying attention to what's happening in your body. You know what's happening. But to push your calories earlier in the day, you're much more likely to use those calories. They're not going to tend to get stored in places that you'd rather not have them. And your blood sugars tend to be able to be managed a little bit better because you're going to use those calories up.
That's fascinating. And it does jive with some other research that I had seen where they had people not change their calorie intake, but move their calorie intake to early in the day, like before 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And by just changing timing, they were losing weight.
Right.
And that makes sense that that would be helpful to many diabetics, not just the blood sugar control, but also it'd be helpful in weight loss if that's a needed area. Wow. So that's fascinating. I thank you for sharing that, Cindy.
Sure.
It has been so good to have you here with us today. I just really appreciate what you've shared with us. It's so important for us to understand how our bodies work and cooperate with that. And now I think we know a little bit more and can maybe make some better choices. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And to our listeners, remember that health is wealth. And with every healthy choice, you are getting richer. Have a wonderful day.